Welcome to Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life. Each month, Galley Table Storytelling hosts a live event in the Kodiak community. Storytellers are given 7 minutes to tell a personal story related to a monthly theme. Tonight, we're going to hear those stories.
Our first storyteller tonight is Danielle Butts.
Danielle has some of the typical Kodiak hobbies like hiking and hunting and kayaking, but also botanizing and crocheting fill her time when she's not working out, or doing schoolwork. So please welcome Danielle.
I've always wanted to tell a galley table story since the first galley tables I went to in 2016. I was newly a seasonal intern, and I don't remember the theme for the night, but I do remember one story about a gal who fell in love with her now husband, and she came for the summer, and she ended up staying. And there's like three things I remember about that story. One is there was like something about a hot tub, and I can't remember what. And two, something about the color of his eyes, which were like blue or green or something. And three, it was Lindsay Gwen who told the story, and I don't know you if you're here, Lindsay. I feel really creepy knowing your full name and the story of your husband. But it had a very big impact on me, and I was like, wow, if I could ever tell a story about falling in love and staying in Kodiak, that would be so cool. But to backtrack a little bit, I had arrived in Kodiak a few weeks before, and I was picked up by Carrie Eschenbacher, who's the salmon camp director at the time. And she dropped me off at the bunkhouse that can fit 12 people. And she's like, there's only two other guys in the house right now, and they're invasive crew. And so I was like, oh, nerds. I did invasives later, so I'm a nerd too. And so she dropped me off, and they weren't there, so I went to my room, and I kind of hid away because I was very shy at the time. And I heard them come back, and I was like, I have to go introduce myself because I don't want to be that crazy girl that's like hiding in the bedroom and like doesn't come out and say anything. So I went out and introduced myself, and the second person I met in Kodiak was a guy named Danny Hernandez, and he was super cute. Like, he had the long hair and the beard and was like kind of like the dirty Alaska field guy, and like just came back from the field, and I was like, oh my god, wow, I have to live with this guy? And it turns out being a shy person and living with somebody you have a crush on is actually like really good because it forces you to talk to them and be like, hey, can I borrow your coffee? Or like, can I use this like little space in the fridge next to yours? Is that okay? And then, so we ended up spending some time together, and it turned into more like hanging out, and we bonded being the only two half Mexicans of the house. So that bonding, we decided to make a Mexican dinner for the rest of the interns at the house. And he went to the grocery store. He was gone for what seemed like forever. Like, I thought this guy was like just driving off island. Like, he didn't want to see me again. He was like, nope, all right, let's go. So I was like, what's going on? And finally he came back, and he was like, turns out, didn't make it to the grocery store, but I do have a dead deer at the back of my truck. I was like, oh, okay. When he was going to the grocery store, he saw a woman hit a deer, and he was a nice man and pulled over to make sure everything was okay. It was not okay for the deer. It did not live. And the trooper came, and he got to take the deer because she didn't want it, so he brought it back. And at the time, I was a vegetarian and from Ohio and never seen a dead animal before, but I really wanted to impress him, so I was like, can I see the deer? And he was like, yeah, it's in the back of my truck. Here it is. And so he brought me over there, and there was a dead deer. And I was not ready for that. So I was like, cool, I'll be right back. Went to the bathroom, cried really quick. Pulled it together. I was like, gotta impress this guy. And I went back out there, and I was like, how can I help you? And so I ended up helping process that deer, and I was trying to remember like details about it, but I think I blacked it out. I think either I was so excited or terrified, I don't know what was happening, but it sparked a love and interest in hunting and harvesting deer that has lasted till now. Anyway, so that also sparked a bond between us, and we started spending more and more time together, and those hikes turned into camping between the two of us, and we would sneak off from the rest of the house, and I thought we were so sneaky, like nobody knew what was happening. We were just going and spending the night other places, and nobody knew where we were, and that's okay, right? So the rest of the summer kind of proceeded, and at the end of the summer, I had to tell Carrie, like, hey, you know, Danny and I are going to keep dating, and he's going to drive me to the airport. And she was like, oh, he is. And this is where, like, Carrie's mama bear, like, instincts came out. And she's like, oh, like, let me preface, he's a little bit older than me. And I was a young college intern, and I was like, we're going to continue long distance. And she's like, oh, okay, interesting. And then later that night, we were all at the little bar having a good old time, and everybody's like laughing, and it's fun and fine. And like all of a sudden, I see Danny like in a corner, like kind of cowering, and I see Carrie like pointing her finger at him, talking to him like this. And I was like, oh my God, what is happening? And I didn't go over because I was too terrified to know what was possibly happening. And I had a friend that was like, it's fine, they're just talking. And I'm like, I don't think so. And I think the conversation ended up going a little bit like, what are your intentions with her? Don't break her heart. She's just a young college girl. All those good things that I really appreciate her looking out for me. And it was really good that she did, but it turns out that his intentions were very good. And 6 years later, she shared that story at our wedding. She gave a speech at our wedding. And told that story. And at our wedding, Danny referenced the roadkill deer in his vows to me. So, I really must have left a mark on that moment because he still loved that about me like 6 years later. And now 7 years later, we own a house and we have two cats and five chickens that I don't love as much as my cats. And so I just wanted to take this opportunity to let anybody know in here that thinks maybe they're here for the summer and maybe it's just gonna be a summer thing, but maybe this story is the start of a love story for you that will turn into 7 years down the line, you're gonna tell a galley table story.
I would like to introduce our next storyteller. Beth Kaler was born in Pensacola, Florida. She came to Kodiak in 2006 and has considered it home ever since. She owns Grand Slam Toy and Games.
Don't be silly. Grow up.
Shh, not so loud.
Be serious, put your head down, work hard. These are all things I heard a lot growing up as a kid, and while I know that they weren't intended to hurt me, they left their mark. I learned that it was better to be seen and not heard. I learned that my ideas were nonsense. I learned that to be successful meant perfection, whatever that was. And because I loved to laugh and play and be silly, I learned not to make decisions. To this day, I still struggle with making decisions to the point that if we go out to dinner together, I will narrow down my choices to two or three things, then ask you what I want to eat. It's a bit ridiculous, but one of the weird things is that when it comes to major life-altering decisions, I can make those like that and not really question it. I might have moments of, oh, is this the right thing? But really in the depths of my heart, I know that it's right. I'm gonna share a couple of those examples with you tonight. The first is when I realized that I was gonna marry my husband. Only thing is, we hadn't gone on a date yet, and we didn't even know each other's names. It was 2001, and I was working at a restaurant in Pensacola, Florida. He was in flight school with the Coast Guard, and he would come to the Village Inn to study to avoid playing video games. And I was working there on slow night and literally walking around in circles in the lobby, talking to my hostess. And I'm a verbal processor, so sometimes things just come out of my mouth. And I said, it's gonna be really funny to tell my kids the best thing to come out of this place is their father. At that moment, I looked up, I saw him, and in my heart, I knew I was gonna marry him. That night, he asked me on a date. And he did have to ask his waitress my name after I said yes. We've been together ever since. We were spent a few years stationed down in Clearwater before moving to Kodiak. We were married less than a year later, too, by the way. We moved to Kodiak in 2006. We had two children here. And one of the things we enjoyed doing was taking them for a walk to Mill Bay on to see Grand Slam and let the kids pick out a toy before heading to Mill Bay Coffee to get something to drink and next page to pick out a book for ourselves. We just loved everything that Ron had. He always had great choices. So we transferred overseas for a few years and came back as quickly as possible, and that was 10 years ago. I remember going to the Grand Slam grand opening whenever she moved, Denise bought the store and moved it downstairs in our previous location, and walking out of the grand opening telling Zach, man, I wish I knew this place was for sale. Promptly forgot about it, and life went on. A few years later, we got orders to stay in Kodiak another tour, which was going to allow us to retire here and keep our kids in school here and retire here, which is what we wanted. A little over six years ago, we went to Grand Slam shop for our daughter's 10th birthday. And we walked in and we saw so much potential. And we spent the next few hours talking about what we would do if we owned Grand Slam. The next day, I did what I always did. Took the kids to school, grabbed my coffee, my computer, sat on the couch to scroll Facebook and avoid household chores as long as possible. The very first post at the top of my feed was from Denise saying that Grand Slam was for sale. I messaged her immediately, and we spent about 30 minutes chatting, and I finally let Zach in on that. And he started asking me questions, which I had all the answers to, because I had already asked them. We went to meet with her in person, and 5 days later, we were under contract.
Oh my God.
The next couple of months were pretty scary. There were a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of questioning if it was the right thing, but deep in my heart, I knew it was right. We took over as the owners on Black Friday of 2017, and we were able to immediately implement some of those changes from new inventory to a weekly game night, which is one of our favorite things that we still do. We have made a lot of friends that started off as customers. We've seen children grow up. We've had teenagers that used to come in that are now bringing their children in. And we've heard a lot of great stories of people who used to shop in Ron's garage and are now bringing their kids and grandkids. And it just warms my heart. Then COVID happened. We weren't sure we were going to be able to stay open, or even if we were going to be able to stay in Kodiak in this community that we loved, where we had chosen to make our family and our home. Adapt, improvise, and overcome has always been our motto, so we did that. And Kodiak, you showed up. You kept us alive, and we didn't just survive, we thrived because of all of you. And we couldn't be more grateful. About a year and a half ago, a fellow business owner came to me and said, what do you think about both of us moving into the marketplace together? And I immediately had this excitement, scared pit in my stomach. And I knew it was the right thing. And 5 days later, we were under contract. A year and a half later, we have 1 week under our belt. Today, that fellow business owner opened her store, and I'm so excited to be her neighbor. If you haven't been to the Islander, I highly recommend it. It's so cozy and inviting and everything you want in a bookstore. At Grand Slam, our tagline is where Kodiak goes for fun. We believe that everyone should have fun regardless of your age, and that it's really important to stay youthful and to keep your brain alive. We love seeing parents and grandparents and children coming in together and finding just the right thing, whether it's a game, a puzzle, a craft, or even just a silly stuffy to make them laugh. Over the past 6 years, I've learned a lot. I've learned how to make decisions, maybe not with dinner. I have learned that sometimes the most outrageous, nonsensical ideas are the best. I've learned that people want to meet you and get to know you and see the real you. I've learned to allow myself to be seen doing this tonight. Is terrifying and way out of my comfort zone, and it took me until last Friday to say yes. I've learned that being successful and serious doesn't mean you can't play. So I leave you with this. Hold your head up high. Don't be so serious or take yourself too seriously. You can be loud, as loud as you want. And have fun and be silly.
Born and Kodiak resident for 24 years, Roy Thomas loves long walks, good beer, and spending time with his beautiful bride of nearly 29 years.
Welcome, Roy Thomas.
Yeah, I had a knock on my door yesterday at the end of school, and you know how you were on stage last weekend? Well, just come up and be on stage again. So I asked my wife if we could tell our meeting story, and I was vetoed quickly. So this past spring, we put to rest a cat that we had for somewhere between 12 and 40 years, somewhere in that range. There was some consensus that was probably 15 or 16 year old cat, and I'm not a cat person, but this cat was a part of our family for a long time, and he had a unique nickname, and that was Demon Cat. So this is the story of the origin of the nickname Demon Cat. So around the turn of the century, it's weird to use that language, but we can. Around the turn of the century, I was living in a house with my beautiful bride and three lovely daughters. I'm not a cat person. They wanted to be a cat person, and I kept vetoing that as often as I could. And then finally, one day, we were on SWIP hotline, and there was someone called in and said they had kittens adopted. So on February 14th, whatever year that was, within the last 12 or 40 years, someone showed up at our door that evening with a kitten. And they also showed up and said, you know what, the vet bills were pretty high, so this free kitten, oh, wait a minute, my daughter's already here cuddling the kitten. So I had to say yes to some funds for the medical bills for the mama cat. So that's how Valentine entered our life. And Valentine came into our home on Valentine's Day, of course. And a few weeks rolled along, and I said to my wife, I said, you know, we probably should get that cat spayed. And she says, oh, but I grew up on a farm. And I really want my girls to experience the joy of having a litter of kittens. So, we agreed that we'd go ahead and let her have one kitten, and then one litter of kittens, and then we would have her spayed. So, she's 9 months old, and it starts to swell. Yeah, teen pregnancy. She was catting around from the very beginning. Sorry, I don't know. So, pregnancy went on, and as we grew nearer, the pleas from my lovely daughters, Dad, can we keep a kitten? And I'm like, no. Best dad, grumpy boys. I'm not a cat guy. No, we have one cat. No. Finally, one day, I just had enough. Then this cat, mama cat, was pure black. Not a speck of any other color on this cat. So in a little dad fit, I said, fine. If there is a pure white kitten, you may keep it. Ladies and gentlemen, it is important to pay attention in science class. So, cat goes into labor. First kitten is born. There's joy. I'm at work. The kids have been kept home from school. I'm getting updates. Ooh, 3 hours later, we don't have a second kitten. So, after an $823.50 kitty C-section, we got to meet the rest of the cats. And yes, there was a pure white cat in the mix. And so that's how Valentino came into our home. Valentino. Now, he did progress. He grew out of that pure whiteness. He had some Siamese in him, one of the most beautiful cats you'll ever see. Semi-long hair, patches of gray, blue eyes. Wonderful cat. But I think a little brain damage from the C-section because he was a little odd. Mama was a very good mama. She nursed him for 5 years. That is true. She finally had enough. She bathed him up until her death. So his last 2 years, oh man, it was bad. He never learned to bathe himself. And he was kind of aloof from everybody. When he matured, he decided that he wanted to mark the house like a male cat often does. Where he chose was under my bed, against my wall, beneath my pillow. So, now I did not harm the cat, but I was very vicious with the beating of the bed and the whooping and hollering to remove my bed as a safe space for that cat. So, the spraying underneath my bed did stop. No more spraying under the bed. So, he and I had this tenuous relationship for years, and So one night, I needed to use the bathroom in the middle of the night, and for some reason, our 70s-built home didn't have a door on the master bathroom. So a word to you hippies, bathrooms need doors. So not wanting to wake my beautiful bride, I crossed the hallway and went into what was the ducky bathroom. Now, those of us who shopped in the early 2000s, you probably have a roll of ducky or bathroom border in your house too. So that was the ducky bathroom. When you went in, the door that was supposed to be in my bathroom was on the closet inside. And so it was kind of like one of those logic games that was at your grandparents. So we got rid of that door and put in a curtain and the litter box. So I slipped quietly across the hall and into the ducky bathroom, which is one of those hallway bathrooms, linen closet, tub, toilet, sink, closet from the other bedroom. This is your width, right? So just a little bit wider than the door. So I plopped myself down to do some popping, and suddenly I hear scratching. And I'm like, oh, he's doing his business too. Guy's mad. So he then climbs out from behind the curtain and realizes that number one, he's locked in there. And number two, he's locked in there with me. So he starts meowing. And I'm like, I came in here to not wake up my wife. Shh, shh, shh. No success. I grab a towel and toss it over. Shh, will you be quiet? Now I know my wife is awake because the giggling has started across the hall. She is laughing at my plight. And I'm like, all right, to finish my job. And I'm like, now I have to get out of here. By this time, the cat is really agitated, and he starts to hiss. And any time you ask a man about a cat's hiss, he has to be like hissing. It's what we do. So the cat is going, and in this bathroom, the light is behind me, and the cat begins to crawl up the corner of the door frame. He is now at eye level with me at the end of this hallway. The light is behind me, and his eyes are glowing, a fire red searing into my brain. And going, you have to remember, he is holding onto the door frame, so his hand is around backwards like a scene from The Exorcist. I do not remember how I got out of the bathroom. That is the origin of his nickname, Dean.
So Sharon Co. Duckerman was born in Granada Hills, California, and grew up in Kodiak. She's an interior designer and lives in San Luis Obispo. But she's currently spending time with family, Janice Stevens and Stephanie Mangini. And her hobbies include dancing, hiking, music festivals, and traveling. One odd detail about Sharon is that she knows a lot about commercial airplanes.
I did one of these 3 years ago, I think. And the size has grown.
Doesn't even live here.
I don't live here. I live in California and other places. My origins. My origin. I am from here, raised here, born here, I say, because that's how it feels. It's my hometown. But I was actually born in Granada Hills, as Sarah just told you, in 1976 to a German dad and a Norwegian mom that met at a stoplight in two cars on a warm summer night in Seattle. My mom had freshly gotten back from her first year of college in Colorado, and my dad's friends had drugged him out after his first wife had served him divorce papers while visiting his mom in Germany. Sherry and he had only been together for 4 years and had two young sons, Casey and Sean. Some of you might know my family. On that night, the two cars, side by side, waiting for the light to turn green, the boys yelled over at the three girls and said, "Girls, do you want to go to a party?" The girls yelled back, "Do you have a bathroom? One of us really has to go." They said, "Yes, follow us." So the story goes, by the time Cindy was out of the bathroom, my parents were in a deep conversation, locked together, and from that moment, inseparable for the next 50 years. They began an intense romance, both attending the U of Dub, eventually moving down to LA, where my dad took a job as a union rep for Standard Oil, getting people to join the union. My mom, they were married in 1969 and had bought a house in the Santa Susana Hills above Simi Valley. My mom had many jobs temping for Kelly Girl all over the valley and LA, even once at Howard Hughes' company. She even worked as a bartender in an exotic club with female dancers, and she realized she could actually make more money on stage. So my dad was actually did not have a problem with this. So he would bring a bottle of champagne on her breaks, and they would drink it in the car, and then she would go back to work. At this time in LA, and maybe actually still today, you cannot drink at a nude bar. So he supported her in what she did. They were crazy, wild hippies in LA for the next 7 years. They even actually grew a little pot, which was illegal at the time. Don't tell anyone. My mom said that my dad was the worst hippie because he hated to be poor. They worked really hard. They started coming up to Alaska in the summers. My grandfather was the electrician foreman at Alitac at the south end of the island. So he got them jobs and they started spending summers up there. I was born 7 years after they were married. They were married in 1969. So my sister and our first summers were at the south end. My dad spent 4 years working there and moved his way up the ranks and started being on the docks, talking to all the fishermen, and the salmon fishermen and crew would come in. And one of the guys, Simon, one day said, "Lou, why don't you come fishing with me? I think you'll like it." And he said, "Okay, I'll do one trip." And then he was hooked. That was the beginning of his fishing career. My mom went back to California and was raising me and my sister. And she was like, "Nope, we're not doing this. Find us a house." So my dad did. He bought us an unfinished house at Three Sisters with no insulation, hardly running water. I think it had electricity and just a wood stove, no furnace. It was a rough cabin life. In the trees, dark, cold, damp. My dad would try to work on the house while he was home from fishing trips. He fished all the time. My mom was tough. I always think how strong she was and how strong she had to be to keep it all going, to keep the wood stove lit. It would go out at night so many times. She would wake us up for school the next day and say, "Get up." And I'd be like, "No, it's so cold." And she'd like, "Get your clothes, run out. I've already started the fire." I would always love to go play in town at the friends' houses, the houses with the canopy beds and the Cabbage Patch dolls, the normal homes, the nice homes, the pretty houses, the finished houses. I was full of envy and jealousy and desire for the nice homes. They had a furnace, what a concept. And they even had this device that dried your clothes. The houses they had toilets that you could flush without running the well dry. It was two different worlds, the town kids and the kids who lived out the road, a different lifestyle. I really hated living out there because I felt like the struggle was hard. You talk to all of us now as grown-ups, and they all say, "I love coming to your house to play. It was wild, it was so cool, it was fun, and it was adventurous, running through the woods." And I would relay how much I loved their houses with the emerald green carpet and the geese kitchens with the matching wallpaper. It was the 80s. All of this talk about homes in the beginning, I should tell you I'm an interior designer, which Sarah also mentioned. It seems fitting, the early years. They were formative. My feelings of space, comfort, security, and how to create space and homes for others. The things that were so important to me, aesthetics, color, texture, pattern, light, bright, inviting. The sense of what you want to stay, creating the emotion, the comfort, the style, the mood, calm, fun, party, safe. So those were the early days. They were so important. And I wouldn't trade them for the world. They made me strong, they made me realize I could survive, and they made me and shaped me and the person I am today.
Eleanor Paul Ramos has a long and vivacious life that I'm gonna give you an introduction to. She was born in Long Island, New York, many decades ago. She has lived for 3 years in Copacabana Beach in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. She has held many different jobs, from a cosmetic factory, process server, telemarketer, mostly as a trilingual Spanish and Portuguese administrative assistant. Her favorite job was working with international celebrity Pele and also driving a New York City yellow cab on the night shift before GPS and cell phones. She moved to Alaska in 1987 after being hired on the phone for a part-time job with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. She has worked for an attorney, a physician, Kodiak Oil Response. The longest position she had was for the Kodiak Police Department. She is currently retired, but accepts some short-term temporary assignments. Maintains a fairly busy social life and some social or volunteer activities. She loves to travel. The list is long, my friends. She has one sister, Nancy, who still lives in Long Island. She's spent a year here and returned several times since. In July, Eleanor usually flies to New York and they drive together to the annual convention of the BDAA. And I'll let her explain what that is. She loves music, odd foods, loves the water, and is here to tell you a story tonight.
I am dumbstruck because I supplied four bullets saying that I arrived on April 15th, it was tax day 1987. I knew no one, and I said I worked various jobs and I had New York City taxi driver, Pele, and the Kodiak Police Department. I don't know where all this is coming from.
You're well known.
Somebody did research. I am most impressed. All right, and I am a procrastinator. Okay, I don't usually have trouble being heard, but I'm shy with microphones, believe it or not. And I'm vision impaired now, mobility challenged, so that's all the intros. Now you can start the talk, I guess. I don't have trouble talking, I have trouble shutting up. Anyone that knows me will know that. So I'm going to get the duck call, but at any rate, you've learned more about me than I almost remembered about myself. The name Ramos, many people think that I am of Hispanic origin because I speak Spanish and Portuguese fluently, and I always identified with Latinos because when I was growing up, the white guys didn't like the Latin big butts, and I have been obese since I was a kid. And Latins, if you could dance, if you could swim, if you could eat, they were, you know, and 4 pounds to the ounce. And so you white guys didn't know what you were missing, but I've had several husbands. and that's where, well, they weren't all Latin. One was from Afghanistan, but he was a lover, not a fighter. At any rate, the name Ramos, I kept it because most of my work has been with Portuguese and Spanish. And so I wanted people to think that my English was excellent and not question my Spanish, and it worked. So Spanish people claim me, Hispanic people, the Filipinos think I'm Filipino, and it's actually Brazilian, from Portugal originally, but Brazil. I kept the Ramos through several marriages, and the Pole is my middle name, and that is what I'm here to discuss about. Me, they say think global, act local, and I think of origins of countries and origins of species as origins, and I was going to go get a dictionary and or Google or do whatever, but I said, people see me, they know me, they think they know me, I'm beginning to know myself. But at any rate, that's that. But my actual heritage is both German and Austrian, with a little Czech and Hungarian in it. And I am not fluent in any of those languages. I started to learn German, and I'm very embarrassed that while my pronunciation of what I do know is fairly good, I could not carry on. Again. But I can eat in any language. And as she knows, I love trying new foods, sometimes once, sometimes twice, and more often than not, I like it. I started eating stinky cheeses and pickled herring and weird stuff when I was little. And as you can see, it's stuck. So what I wanted to do is do a PowerPoint production, but this is Galley Table Talks, and I don't know how to do a PowerPoint. And I couldn't recruit some 12-year-old kid who could do it in his sleep. But I have pictures that show the difference between my German side of the family and my Austrian side of the family. And I have one sister, and we split the gene pool in very peculiar ways. So We, on the, my father's side, we descend from royalty, which I will discuss never, no, toward the end. I inherited my mother's body type and my father's personality. Okay, so my father's side, they came over, my father and his two sisters and both parents came over on a boat from Vienna, well, not directly from Vienna, but in 1902. My dad was born in 1899, so he had me when I was 40, he was 47. They were poor immigrants, and they he was a glazier. My grandfather was a glazier in Vienna, and they made money to survive. In the early days, the sisters made beaded flowers. They had glass beads, jars and jars of glass beads, and they would string them on wires and make glass beads. My father dropped out of school in the ninth grade to help his father deliver crullers. And I don't know if everybody knows what crullers are, but they're a type of donut. And he would deliver them to restaurants in Long Island. He eventually got into his diploma, his high school diploma, and then he got college diploma, and then he became, he may have been poor with education, formal education, but he was very clever. He was always inventing things, and he mailed himself the plans to prove that he invented them on such a day, but could never get anyone to back his inventions. And many of them have come into being, and it's kind of sad because you gotta capitalize on that. But and then he eventually became a member of Mensa, and he dropped out because it's a high IQ society, and people would walk around, "Hi, my name is Hans, and my IQ is 175 or something like that." He said, "There are a bunch of snobs," and he said, "It doesn't matter, you know, matters more your personality." So he eventually worked his way up. No way. Sorry, dude. All right, either I talk fast or you give me some extra time. You did the introductions. Anyway, so he worked mostly with aviation. He loved flight. He never piloted, but he knew Amelia Earhart, he knew Charles Lindbergh, but not the Wright brothers. And he eventually became assistant to the vice president, one of the vice presidents of Republic Aviation during the war. And then after the war, we were back to being poor again. My mom's side of the family started out from Germany, and the great-grandfather was a stowaway, and the captain discovered him and liked him, and he became a cabin boy. And then that was my great-grandfather. My grandfather owned a pharmacy in Coney Island, and then they were more affluent, and they traveled, well, my grandmother and my great-grandmother, they traveled on cruises. They didn't have airplanes in the early days, and moved to Flatbush, and that was that. And my mom was more educated. She became a phys ed teacher, and she was about my size, perhaps a little larger, and she did everything her kids could do. She taught them parallel bars, trampolines, field hockey, archery. She was once shot in the behind with an arrow that drove herself to the hospital. So anyway, that's enough about her. So my sister and I both have the same origins, the same parents, the same grandparents, the same history. And as I said, my sister has my father's body type. She's dark-complected, strong teeth, strong bones, little bones, and I have my mother's large bones and lots of stuff on them. And fair complected and crummy teeth, crummy, a lot of things. But I have my father's personality, which to me is, I love my mother dearly, but she had a little bit of a short fuse. And she would conk out after the third page of the newspaper. And 8, 9 o'clock, she was zoning out. And I am a night owl. And incurable night owl, and it's only getting worse as I get older. Okay, I'll try, but... okay, so the things we share, my sister and I share. A love of music, we got that from my father. My sister plays viola, violin, guitar, piano, and a domra, which is a stringed instrument, Russian stringed instrument. We both sang in the church, different church choirs. I now sing with this Kodiak Russian ballad like a player's plug. They're playing tomorrow at the library at 2 o'clock, 1 hour. It's a rare public performance. We used to only do it for the cruise ships and very once a year at the library and at the at Crab Festival in the History Museum. Okay, and I do percussion and I do occasional solos. Mm-hmm. Oh, and we both played in the marching band in high school, and you'll never guess what instrument we played. The Glockenspiel. You try marching doing this. And we both like to travel, and I still like my odd foods. And I was the neatnik as a child. I would organize my sister's messy room. Well, tables have turned. She's the neatnik, I'm a hoarder, and I'm a slob. Trying to reform, but it's as you say, I have mobility challenges pretty hard. So, like I said, one sister, same origins, but worlds apart, and we're so similar, and yet so different. And, okay, well, that's the end of that, but I promised you about the royalty. So, my... well, it's got two parts. It's... They made jokes about the family jewels, and I thought because we always said we're descended from royalty, that I thought they were actual family jewels and it meant something totally different. And when they said getting something caught in the drawer, that was Uncle Yoshi, who I never met. But my father is a spitting image, and if anybody of you come to my house, I'll show you pictures of the Emperor Franz Joseph and pictures of my father. And the head, the nose, the chin, the mustache, so it's identical. And that's it. But my father said, and this was supposed to be the conclusion 10 minutes ago, it doesn't matter where your origins are, it's who you are now and where you're headed. And so he said, and besides that, we're from the bastard side of the House of Habsburg.
Our next storyteller is Jared Williams. He is 47 years old. He's from New Jersey. He used to Coast Guard. He's been in Kodiak for 11 5/13 years total. He likes dogs. He is more or less self-aware. He has a problem saying no to bad ideas. He believes that the tomato is a vegetable, not a fruit. Please welcome Jared.
This is my first time at Gala Tables. So, I don't know how this is supposed to go, but I have a shameless plug and I'm just going to get it out there like right off the bat. I'm in a band, and you guys haven't seen this in a while because our lead singer went off and went to go Coast Guard in Hawaii. So we have a new lead singer. Any guesses? We'll be back at it probably February, I think. Tones. Anyway, to my story, it's supposed to be origins. So I was not born here, as Elmi stated earlier. I did not grow up here. I joined the Coast Guard, and everyone talked about this mythical place called Alaska. And they have mountains of fish and bears and things, so I thought, hey, let's go check that out. So we got here, my wife and daughter got here in 2005. I was a C-130 pilot then. Sorry, the origin story is about how I went from zero to hunter, like full-on hunter. And if you're a vegan or you're kind of squeamish about hunting stories, we're going to talk about animals dying, so trigger alert, trigger warning right now. Anyway, we got here in 2005. A lot of my friends hunted. I did not. We left in 2009. We went other places, and we came back here in 2016. And I barely get off the ferry, and a friend of mine calls me and says, hey, I have this go tag, and I need people to come with me to carry it out. If you've never been game hunted, in Alaska, you walk into the wilderness, up usually, you shoot a large animal, in some cases the size of a horse, and then you're required to carry it back out again. There's no drive to the tree stand, drink beer all day, throw the deer in the back of your truck and drive home. So I was like, yeah, sounds good, what do I need? And he's like, some snacks. So I was like, sweet, I can do that. Gear? He's like, nah, I got everything, you're good. So I started this hunt. In marmot pants, an outdoor research jacket, some 20-year-old boots, and a backpack. I'm not really sure where I got it from. But day one, I literally walked the sole off the boot. The rubber and the leather no longer wanted to be married. So the sole stayed on the mountain, and I kept climbing into the leather. I finished the hunt in a pair of sneakers carrying 90 pounds of goat meat back down the mountain. So that's where I started, and it very slowly ramped up. I have a rule that if you go from zero to full on, you're into this hobby, hook, line, and sinker, it's gonna cost you $5,000 minimum. So I got invited to an elk hunt the next year. We went and had a great time, and I was sitting down with my neighbors, now very good friends. I was like, is this something that we just like do all the time? Because I'm tired of like shredding my marmot pants, and I don't think I'm properly equipped for this activity. And they're like, no, you're really not. So I was like, I'm gonna get into this. I'm gonna like do it proper. So what do I need? He's like, well, put in for an elk tag, and if you draw it, then you have to buy all the stuff. So I did, and I did. So we'll fast forward here, because I don't want to hit a damn duck call. Long story short, the whole point of this story is this year, we went on a very nice elk hunt to the western wilds of the Bogmac. No one's been there before. You are truly on your own out there. We took a boat over, a very nice boat, a friend of ours, it was a charter boat, and we slept on that. We watched the Rugby World Cup on Starlink every evening, drank a whole bunch of whiskey, and there was no warning that the trip would go any differently than it always has. We go out, we shoot an animal, really good shots, harvested an elk, took two bullets, very ideal situation, everything's great. We have meat on the ground, we eat for the next 2 or 3 years. So it's 3 days before the end of this hunt, and we finally get on a herd that we can stalk and get to an ethical shooting point. And we do, and we spend the next 2.5 hours chasing this tank of an elk all over the mountainside. 2.5 hours, lots of drama, I won't get into it, but we finally get him down late at night. So we put a bear fence around him, and we hike out in the middle of the night. We come back the next day, and we start the process. There's only 3 of us, so a big bull, about 500 pounds of stuff to carry out. So we decide we're gonna get it in half, we're gonna hang half of it, and we're gonna hike the other half out. So me and my friend Andy, we get 200 pounds of meat in bags, and we decide to go find a bear tree, and that's where you hang meat, so the bears can't get to it. We get down, we find a spot, Andy goes up in the tree, I throw him the 550 line, he's looping around the branch, we're being jackasses nice and loud, so we know when bears come in. And I'm standing there holding 100 pounds of meat in a red shaded bag. And all of a sudden, the mountain about 20 yards away comes alive. The entire, like 20 yards by 20 yards, the whole mountain just, it's the only way I can describe it. This bear came out of the woods and somehow grabbed all the foliage on his way out into the open to make himself seem like he was the size of a tank, which he was. So for bear defense, Andy has spray, and I have leaded spray. Almost there. So now I'm gun out, and I'm staring at this bear, and he's staring at me. We both want the meat. I'm not really supposed to shoot him to defend the meat, but chances are he's going to go through me to get the meat. So we face off. I say things that I would not say to any human being ever alive. He seems to understand. And after 2 or 3 bluff charges, he runs off. So now Andy's up in the tree, and I'm standing there holding a loaded 10 millimeter at nothing. And he goes, dude, you need to get in the tree. Yeah, great idea. So it's about a 10 meter radius or diameter area I'm standing this thing. I literally am running circles around this little area with a gun in my hand, finger inside the trigger guard, which is not good gun safety, freaking out, can't find a tree. I come back to his tree. I was like, dude, keep climbing, I'm coming up. Holster the thing, run up. We spent 10 or 15 minutes up there, like, well, what do we do? I don't know. If he doesn't come back in 5 minutes, he probably won't, right? I don't know. So we spend that time up there. We come back down. We hang the meat. We go back up to our buddy, who's still cutting the animal apart 300 yards away. Has no idea what just happened. We explain to him. We get half the meat out. We come back the next day, and that bear was standing in the trail about 100 feet from our meat tree and like not wanting to move. The second day, one of our 3-man party has had his foot in the mouth of a bear. So we're like, all right, what do we do? I was like, I don't know, let's make a bunch of noise, trying to push him off it. I don't know, shoot in the wrong direction, see if he gets scared. So we toddle up about 20 feet, and he sits down under the meat tree, and we're all quiet. And then all of a sudden, I hear a dog bark. My My buddy James, who knows what it feels like to have his foot inside of a bear's mouth, goes, "That's not a dog, dude. We're out of here. Game over. I'm done." And just runs back. Now, Andy and I are chasing him out. So my origin story is going from little skater punk, South Jersey, going to the arcades, hanging out at the malls, to, in basically 7 years, zero to Hunter. And by the way, it's way more than $5,000. And the meat's like $12 a pound by the time you get done with it. But it is delicious. Thank you for your time.
Final storyteller tonight. Sergio Gutierrez was born in Iloilo City, an island on the southern part of the Philippines. He came here to Kodiak to work last December 12, 2022. He is employed as a music teacher at one of our elementary schools under the Kodiak Island Rural School District. For the record, he volunteered for this story. He was not cornered. He doesn't have a family here on the island. It was just a leap of faith that brought him here to Kodiak. And hiking is one of his favorite hobbies. Please welcome our last storyteller of the evening, Sergio.
So, in the past 30 years of my existence, this is the first time I felt stage fright again. I've been performing all my life, but this is the first time I have this feeling again. So, leap of faith. So, without taking a leap of faith again, I think I've been doing that for the past 32 years of my existence. Without taking a leap of faith, I will not be here again in front of you guys, because it was just last week that Sarah emailed me that two of my friends recommended me to be one of the storytellers. And without knowing about anything about galley tables and without hesitation, I said yes again. Again, it's a day. It's the leap of faith. So growing up and born in the Philippines in a tropical country, I didn't expect to be here in Kodiak. Well, my journey coming here to Kodiak started last year when I applied with the Kodiak Island Borough School District for the position of music teacher. So I applied in May of 2022, and I think it was the last week of May, because I've been applying to a lot of school districts all over the United States. And Kodiak, of all the districts that I applied to, it was the last one that popped out in my Google browser. And I said, I think, yeah, I'll try Kodiak. It's now or never. If it's not Kodiak, maybe United States is not for me. So after a week, I got an email from the HR. I got an interview. It was very exciting, but very nerve-wracking. So after the interview, they set a schedule for me with the principal. And after that, I got the job. Like after 30 minutes, after the interview, they emailed me that. Welcome, welcome. It was very overwhelming because it was the last school that I applied to. And I didn't expect that I would get into it. So I got into it and I was very happy. And they said that they would contact me, so I was just waiting for the email for updates. I waited. So while waiting, I researched about Kodiak, and I was thinking, what am I getting into? Am I sure that I'm coming here? Well, I wasn't nervous. I'm excited because I'm an adventurous person. The one that was nervous was my sister, because we're four. Okay, I have siblings, and I'm the youngest. And they didn't expect that the youngest one would go out the country. So then I waited, research about Kodiak, and the thing that I was concerned about was rent. Knowing that rent is high in Kodiak, I was asking myself, should I go there, or maybe my salary will be just paying all my rent and then bills? Well, again, it's a leap of faith. So after a month, I received an email again. But this email saddened me because it stated that there was no visa available for me to work here in Korea. So they said that they would reconsider me for this school year, the 2023-2024. So saddened by the news that I received, I then applied to some schools in Dubai. I applied to schools in Dubai just to prepare myself. I applied to international schools so that I would be able to practice my skills as a music teacher to different cultures. So mixed cultures. So, but then, by the time that I'm going to pass all my paperwork, I think it was August, that the secretary of the assistant superintendent emailed me again. Hey, we're still looking. The slot or the job opening for a music teacher is still open. If we could be able to find an agency to process your visa, which is an H-1B visa, would you like to go here in Korea? And again, without hesitation, I said yes. And from that then on, my adventure with the processing began. So processing with visa coming from the Philippines is not easy. It took me a long time. But moving forward, I arrived here in Kodiak, welcomed by the cold weather with just my jeans and my t-shirt and my thin jacket. Hungry, we went directly to Safeway to buy the roasted chicken. So after that, I've been connected to community. So the start of my community involvement was when some of the Filipino community met me by accident. It was my first week here in Kodiak. I went downtown to buy a sandwich at Subway, and I saw some Filipino friends chattering and whispering. Music teacher. And then they called me, hey, would you like to volunteer to be a pianist in their church? And again, because I'm an extrovert person, taking the leap of faith every time. Right there again, I said yes again. And then I started my community involvement with St. Mary's Church. I played there every 11 a.m. Mass to 12. And then it started there, so met new friends, new people around town. And then summer came because there's a lot of people asking if I offer private lessons, so I did last summer. And it went well. It gave me some extra allowances. Okay. And so it's been great to be here in Kodiak. Also, I didn't imagine becoming a DJ in the radio. So it was only during the time with the family night at North Star that I was a makeshift DJ because we needed for our event. And it came through with the connection of my friend Danny. She introduced me to Pat Forman. And then my DJ career started. So if you're trying to have a radio at home, you may listen to my program. It's every Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. So I hope you will enjoy listening to Filipino music. But I'm very happy I'm here in Kodiak, and also I'm happy to say that I'm part of the upcoming concert, Joy. And it was very overwhelming that it was during a birthday that I auditioned last September 10th. So having two churches to serve, having that audition, it was a great experience. I wasn't able to celebrate my birthday, but yes, I hope that all of you would come to our concert. It's going to be on December, I forgot. Well, it's going to come out. But again, I would like to thank each and everyone here in Kodiak for welcoming me. Without having any family, Kodiak feels home.
Galley Table Storytelling is made possible through a partnership with the Kodiak Arts Council and Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation. Visit us online at galleytables.com to find the date and location of the next live storytelling event. You can also browse our archives and listen to past stories or sign up to be a storyteller. Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life.